History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold, and they don't have to. All we need to do is ask a few questions and take the time to listen to what comes back our way from some of our more experienced neighbors. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we come out ahead. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. I'm in Fresno, California today with 100-year-old Dorothy Jones. 100. That's a big number. And you just had a 100th birthday party here recently.
Oh, boy, that was fun. That was great. All the neighbors came. Of course, we couldn't come into each other's homes and all that sort of thing. But the neighbors flocked in. All the representatives from the Honor Flight, that was a wonderful experience, too. We just had a great time, and it was a gorgeous day. It was November 29th, and that was a Sunday, and the good Lord sent sunshine and beautiful day, and I couldn't ask for a better 100th birthday. I recommend it to everybody.
And we'll all try to take you up on that or follow your advice. And, you know, there was a little local news coverage of that. And since then, people have been wanting to talk to you. You've heard from folks even in other countries?
Honestly, this is mind-boggling. Yes, someone in England is pulling together a story of World War II, because so many of the World War II people have gone off to heaven already. And yeah, we got from there, and two or three from the states here. Iowa, the man and I are getting quite chummy corresponding with each other. And the father of one of my neighbors who lives in North Carolina, and he heard me from that station there in Statesville, North Carolina. So we've been corresponding. And that's the only thing I do is write, because I don't use the email or the sort of thing that, and I see you have an Apple gadget there, and I don't do that sort of thing. I just write and talk, and that's it.
Well, it seems to be working just fine.
Works fine. I haven't stopped it yet.
And I'm glad you had room in your busy calendar to squeeze me in to talk to you here today with all the requests
ideal.
You're getting.
Ideal.
And you've lived here in Fresno for a long time, but this is not where you grew up. Tell me where you grew up and what your childhood was like.
Okay. Oh, I was born and grew up in South Carolina and was at the very end of the Great Depression. So I know what it's like to be living in a time when jobs were scarce. My father was a barber, and Lord knows, barbers didn't make much money. And there were six of us kids, which gave a pretty, it worked. We were church-going people, but we were also poor as church mice, and that worked fine, too. And then we all grew up.
Well, and, you know, considering that, I imagine your childhood was a little different from the childhood your children had here in Fresno. And maybe you told them a story or two over the years of the chores you had to do or the way you guys had to make do in those Depression years. Anything you want to share with us?
Oh, man. It's a different world completely. And I wonder what the next 100 years is going to bring for the next generation to go into that. Yeah, it was different. We lived, I won't say hand to mouth, but when you learn to live without, because you've never had the types of things that kids have today, thank goodness they have it much better. And I hope they realize it. And I hope they will continue to realize it, because we grew up with not too much, but every little advancement was a great help.
I'm thinking about how different the world is, not just for everybody, but specifically for mm-hmm. women. The young girls today may have different kinds of dreams and ambitions than you had as a young lady there in South Carolina. Do you remember having a dream that, hey, one day this is what I'm going to do with my life or make of myself?
Yeah. I used to think, now this is back in 1920 and 21 and 22, and as I grew up, it got a little older in school, I thought, California. Would I love to see California? It was just as far away as it is going to the moon now, you might say. And gradually you find yourself. I was the first one, actually, in my family who graduated high school. And as things were at that time, that was as far as I dared even hope. I would love to have gone on to college, but I couldn't afford it. Jobs were scarce, but I was able to get a job. I'd taken the commercial courses in high school and was able to type and take shorthand and do that sort of thing. Well, I was 2 years before I even got that job. So once I started working and helping financially at home, then my two older brothers were helping too, and things began to lighten up considerably. And it wasn't until World War II came along that jobs became available. And it's sad to think that, but things were beginning or had been bubbling in Europe for a while. And it was obvious that it wasn't going to stop there. And I continued to go to my little work and type my little typing up and all that sort of thing. I've graduated high school in 1938. Then the war came along into our country, because we knew from the news and things were happening that it was not going to stop there. And when Pearl Harbor came along, I was at the right age and the right temperament to, hey, this is going to go over again, so let's go see what that's all about. And a certain amount of patriotism and a certain amount of curiosity and a certain amount of maybe just plain get out there and see what's happening. And so one day in the Charlotte paper, after I'd been out of high school 4 years, 21 now, there was an article in the paper to the effect that a naval officer would be in Charlotte, which was 25 miles from my hometown, down across the South Carolina line. And by golly, it said, any women between the ages of so-and-so and so-and-so, unencumbered with husbands or children or whatever, could call up and go up and for an interview if you're interested in going into the Navy. Well, hey, that was not an auxiliary thing. It was just like the boys going in. But the reason they needed women to go in, girls to go in then, was to relieve the men who were doing the kinds of jobs that women could do, such as office work. And some of the boys were, I'm sure, happy to get out from under that kind of work and put on a fighting uniform and go and serve aboard ship or to one of our islands. At that time, which we didn't know, the Japanese had armed quite a few of the islands down in the Pacific. And you know it now, we know it now. So we went in, I went to Charlotte, and I passed all the little tests, aptitude test and health test and all that sort of thing. And in October of 1942, I left Charlotte and Rock Hill and went to Stillwater, Oklahoma, where they'd taken over a college there as a training base for prospective Navy women. Ha ha! So we were fitted for uniforms and thought we looked. I never thought I would wear anything designed and provided by the main Beauchamp stylist, but I did, and we looked good.
And this was a brand new thing. I mean, President Roosevelt only allowed this a few months earlier, so you were a trailblazer. You were one of the first women to sign up for this, and that was such a big deal. They decided to put a picture of you in the paper. Now, this picture here of all these young ladies on the train. I mean, you guys are on the caboose, and here's these sailors saying goodbye to you.
That's what I get from hauling pictures off the wall upstairs and bringing them down here and showing off. Yes, it hadn't happened before. And Mr. Roosevelt, as well as Eleanor Roosevelt, who has always been my ideal.
Mm-hmm.
I had lunch with her one day.
Really?
Yes, I did. Another story, but it's a good story. Anyway, we went up to Charlotte, and we were sworn in right there. It was, as I said, it was October of 1942, which sounds ancient now, doesn't it? That was a long time ago. And away we went to Stillwater, Oklahoma, for 2.5 months or so of training.
Mm-hmm.
It was training the Navy way of writing letters, the Navy way of setting up your everything. And as I said before, and I'm very proud of this, we were not an auxiliary or a helpful. It was just exactly as the boys were Of course, they had flocked to the recruiting stations by then, because once Pearl Harbor was attacked, everybody became very patriotic and ready to put on a uniform of some kind and go and protect our country. So there we went. I wonder sometimes, really, what would happen today if we had that same sort of thing to look at today. Mm-hmm. If we have the same sort of love of our country, and after that thing in Washington, I don't know what we would expect. But people were ready to do what they could do. Of course, the women were not trained to carry a gun or shoot a gun. We were not that kind of helpers. We went in to relieve a man so he could go and do that.
So you mentioned the attack on Pearl Harbor. I'm always interested. It seems like everybody has distinct memories of where they were and how they found out about that. Do you have a memory like that?
Indeed, I do. We had just come home from church. Now, this in South Carolina, which the timing was entirely different then. It was over in the early afternoon. My mother and I were in the living room, and my youngest brother had gone in the kitchen to see what he could delve out of the dinner in there before dinner was served. Dinner was at noontime, you know. I'm from the South.
That right.
Was, that's not luncheon. It was still dinner. So he came into the living room with a puzzled look on his face, and he said, "You know, something strange is happening someplace. There's a place called Pearl Harbor." We had never heard of Pearl Harbor. Mm. Pearl Harbor. And he said, "I think there's a war going on, and it's our soldiers and things." So naturally, we turned on, and we got the message right then that Pearl Harbor was being attacked. All the joy kind of went out of our lives for a while, because we didn't know where they were going from there. And I don't think they did either. Mm-hmm. I thought of that day, and I thought we had so little protection at that time. And they wiped out practically all the Navy. We had all the battleships were there in a row, and they just burned the heck out of them. And there's still people. I've been back there since, of course. But there's still sailors down under that in the Arizona and the other battleships.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't any fun for them. And everything took a change then. We were in the war, and my little job typing away in the office where I'd been. So that's when I saw the ad in the notice in the paper that women would be accepted, and away I went.
And you mentioned six kids in your family.
Yes.
How many of those six ended up serving in the war?
Three of my brothers and myself. Mm-hmm. I had a sister who was married at the time, and then my oldest brother did not serve but the rest of us served in different branches. I was in the Navy until my brother, 2 years older than I, who had been, what is it, when you don't pass the, he had a hearing problem.
4F?
4F. Mm-hmm. And, oh, that just was the most heartbreaking thing for him. So he was accepted then after I'd been in for 6 months or so. And he came, he was accepted, and he served aboard ship. Ran into him in Hawaii when I was stationed there. His ship came into Hawaii. And I got leave and went up, and we had a great time getting
Wonderful.
Reacquainted. And a brother who was in the Air Force, and he was in India, and they flew over the hump. Mm-hmm. Them. That youngest brother then, who told a whole bunch of lies and went into the Marine Corps because he wasn't old enough. And he went into the Marine Corps, and of course he was in some of the invasions in some of the islands down there.
So how old was he?
Well, he was 16, but he was going to be 17 eventually. And I guess they wanted... And he was a big, strong boy. He was a football player and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he did well. And he grew up there, you might say.
And they all made it through the war okay?
All made it. And my brother-in-law, the sister I told you about, was married. And her husband had been in the National Guard. And, of course, he was called up right away.
Mm-hmm.
So we had plenty of stars in the window. At that time, if you had someone in the military that you could... put a little star in your window. And my mother's window was pretty much full of stars. But we all got home safely and telling each other a bunch of war stories, and that was fun too. But I was in there almost 4 years.
And I've got to ask you too, since you mentioned Eleanor Roosevelt was yeah. someone you looked up to, and she did advocate for women's roles.
Yes.
Another thing that she gained some acclaim for is how she advocated for African Americans to serve.
She did, indeed.
And to fly.
Yes.
Growing up in the South, in Rock Hill, I just mm-hmm. out of curiosity, were mm-hmm. those schools, your high school, would that have been a segregated school?
Much to my sorrow. And when I go back there and see my high school, and it was that way.
Mm-hmm.
It was that way. But she did. The two of them were people of their time. I think the person appears when we need him most. And I think at that time, America needed people like the Roosevelts. And thank heavens they did, because they did.
It's time for our first break, but we still have to get to that story about when Dorothy met Eleanor Roosevelt, not to mention more of her adventures in the Navy. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook for photos of this centenarian now, as well as what she looked like back then. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. When life throws you curveballs, you have to be adaptable, or at least have a good pinch hitter on the bench who knows how to handle a curve. When it comes to your business, Provident Payments is the best teammate you could ever have. Perhaps it helps that many of the leaders for one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America are former ballplayers. Contactless payments, online ordering, point of sale, you name it, Provident Payments knows it. Now, you could get some of these services from one of the big banking companies, but you're never going to get the kind of personalized service that Provident Payments delivers every day. 24/7 solution-based tech support. When your ability to process payments goes haywire in any way, time is money. So would you rather wait on hold for who knows how long, or would you like to have a direct line you can call for immediate help? That's where a good teammate comes in. Learn more about bringing Provident Payments onto your team at providentpayments.com. They really are one of the fastest growing payment consultants in America. That website again, providentpayments.com.